How is everybody doing? And welcome back for another Strength Chat episode. Today, I've got a very special guest for you all. Today, I'm joined by the co-founder of the Professional Fitness Coaches Association. Today, I am joined by the one and only Jens Robinson. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Firstly, well done for saying the PFCA so well.
Yeah.
And getting my name right. So many people get my name wrong. So thanks for that. And thanks for having me on.
Good. I'm glad the hours of practice I was doing that in the mirror paid off. But how are you? What's been happening in your world recently?
Very well, very well. Our world is pretty awesome. So obviously we've got the PFCA, so education business. Largely, you know, the industry leader here in the UK when it comes to fitness coaches, and we're just trying to keep raising the standards there. So that's pretty cool. We've got the Gym Owner Network, which is our mentorship for gym owners, the kind of gyms who are, you know, you might be considered as like a micro gym or like a box, where you run a high quality coach led service. You want to build a high performing team and you want to become like really profitable. And then I'm the head of March on Gyms as well. So we've got a few gyms. We're about to open up our next one. So there's some exciting things in the pipeline. There's loads of things going on, but I wouldn't have it any other way. It's very challenging and it's good fun.
Yeah, nice. Plenty of things to keep you busy. And I know obviously you've touched on, you know, a couple of things there. And I know for myself, having seen the content that you put out there, as well as actually listening to you on other podcasts, for everyone listening who maybe might not know how you got into coaching, how you kind of progressed to the point where you are now, just want to give a little bit of a background from when you started to where you are now.
Yeah, cool. I guess the whistle stop version would be, you know, South African rugby player. All I wanted to do was be a Springbok, and I sacrificed many things in order to make that happen. Being in the gym, having access to high quality coaches, high quality strength and conditioning coaches was something I always had access to. In my final year of school, I was able to like get bought to go play for one of the best schools in South Africa. I was in boarding school. It was like full pro. It was incredible. And that kind of gave me like a next level grounding for like where I wanted to go next. My intentions were always to come to the UK to play rugby. The next parts of the story kind of go: played for the Lions in South Africa, couldn't get a visa in time, was studying a business degree, but all I wanted to do was come to the UK. Eventually came to the UK, rugby career didn't go as planned, found myself in Scotland, depressed, overweight, playing poor rugby, thinking, fuck, is this my life? And then I was working in construction at the time and realizing like, this is not who I am. I'm depressed and weighing 125 kilos, always in pain. Like it just wasn't right. And I mean, like the access to gym equipment there when I was so poor. Like I was training in a shipping container. Like it was terrible. I remember just going, oh, I can do better. I did a personal training qualification through like the States, like NASM or something like that. I can't remember. It was now, what, 16, 17 years ago. And I would go to the gym in the morning. I'd go to work during the day because part of the rugby contract was, oh, we'll get you a job in a car. And it was all prestigious. And I went from like having these great dreams to doing this. It was terrible. And then I'd study every night just so I could change my life. And I remember I'd study till like 2 o'clock in the morning, sleep for 3 hours, then get up, train and do it all again just so I could like change the narrative. Anyway, crushed that course. But back then, NASM wasn't recognized with reps. Do you remember reps?
Yeah.
So you couldn't get public liability insurance and you couldn't get a job as a PT. It was like, oh my word, now what do I do? I've just done all of this for nothing. So I went down to London, did another PT qualification that would be recognized. And that's when like the door started to open. I ended up sacking off my life in Scotland playing rugby and moving into my grandmother's garden shed to start my life as a personal trainer in London. Worked in LA Fitness back then, which no longer exists in the UK, but this particular gym in North London had 24 self-employed trainers, and it was dog eat dog,
Yeah.
and you had to really stand out. And that was one of the best periods of my life because you learn so much about yourself. I grew a very successful PT business to the point that some weeks I was doing well over 60 hours a week of PT,
Wow.
which is, silly. Wouldn't recommend it to my worst enemy. But I did that, and at age 24, near the end of that year, I managed to open up my first facility, and that was inspired by, a strength conditioning facility. I was obsessed that we had nine platforms in there. It's like, oh, so sick. But also a lot of influence with CrossFit and CrossFit boxes, and it was just popping off back then. This is like 2015. In the UK, it was just popping off. So I wanted like a little bit of that influence, a little bit of like my S&C influence. And so it was this really cool concept. And we delivered what is now considered like small group PT.
Yeah.
The product was very good. Price point was wrong. Still delivered PT, made all the mistakes. But one thing I did do was I leant into mentorship, I leant into further education, I leant into leadership. Grew that to a place where it was doing phenomenal money for the gym owners listening in your network. This was 1200 square foot, but we're doing 30 grand a month in this gym. Like, it was doing good stuff. And then I got to a stage where it wasn't fulfilling me the way I needed it to, as a dad, having a young family, and he's provided a different level. And what I'd built felt incongruent with the values that I hold. So I walked away, sold my share of the business, moved into like just high-end personal training in London, continued my further education, got to a place where I was, one of the most expensive trainers in London. And that was also when we launched the first version of the education business. So back then it was called the SEA, the Stronger Coaches Academy. And that was born out of myself and Ollie, who is my business partner in several of the businesses I mentioned earlier. With his profile and notoriety and my brain, we were like, look, we can make a difference. Rather than being like every other good trainer who looks at the shit trainer and goes, ha ha, look how bad you are. We were like, do you know what? Why don't we raise the standards? Why don't we help these guys? Why don't we provide them the education that no one provided us? So we created that first version of a mentorship largely around the coach and their coaching skill set. And it popped off overnight. We hit like 80 coaches. We were in 10 different countries. We're like, wow, okay, there's something here. But we realized that what we were doing there wasn't gonna really, it was like a pebble ocean, and what we really wanted to do was like redefine what the standards are. So we rebranded, we thought bigger, and we were like, no, we're going to create professional fitness coaches. We're going to create the kind of coaches who have a long-term career in fitness, both through the success and the impact that they can make in the coaches, sorry, in the clients' lives that they serve, and equally for them, their families, the financial freedom that rewards the best of the best, should they have the skills to coach, but also grow and scale the business. And that was always the mission. Anyway, fast track to where we are now. We are very privileged to have a good reputation for what we're doing. We're the only education provider that has a full career pathway, and a full kind of like educational pathway of development from your qualification to legally start. We call it, the ticket to start your apprenticeship, then into like a business course to get you like ready to start, manage, and grow your business. Then we've got our FFC1, which is our functional fitness coaching certification. Functional fitness being like the tease word, the buzzword that people think they want to learn, whereas actually like function belongs to the client. We teach you just high-end fucking coaching principles in there, right? So it's got nothing to do with fucking barbells and cleans and snatches, standing on a BOSU ball. None of that weird rhetoric towards functional fitness. Like, it's like, we'll get you really strong and we'll get you really fit. And we'll help you optimize movement. Like, our three core tenets are movement quality, number one, optimal challenge, number two, and then functionality, number three. So our education is largely underpinned with that. And then FFC level two is a bit like a master's in fitness coaching. So it's like much more depth across the core elements that you need. So, some of our educators have PhDs in exercise science, and these guys are incredibly way smarter than I am. But now, the things that everyone coaches are still the same shit, right? Like, that, but it's the level of depth in which you understand the mechanisms behind the prescription that makes a big difference. So that's what FFC2 is about. But our whole mission is to elevate the status, respect, and long-term career of the fitness coach. To be able to establish, like this is a reputable, respectable career path. It's not just like a vocation that we do for 2 to 3 years. You get to wear gym weight every day. You get to train in the gym every day and call it a job. It's like people bash it, but like, if you do good work, it's a highly valuable skill set, and something that people should firstly respect on how much work goes into being really fucking good. And like, our job is, we want to just make the cream rise to the top. The good coaches, give them the skills to be marketable, and the marketable coaches, give them the skills to be good coaches. But we don't want lack of skill to be the thing that doesn't take the best to the top. And then all the shit, they can fuck off, because the gap will be so much bigger, and the consumer will only get more and more educated, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the key words that you said there is having a long career, having that respect, as a personal trainer, as a coach, because you're right in what you're saying. Some people do it for a couple of years, and then they just think, oh no, it's not worth it, or they just think of it as something part time. One of the questions that I wanted to touch on is, like what you said with the keywords there of, leveling it up, raising the standard, having that respect. Why do you think sometimes there is a perception that, personal training, coaching isn't, a long-term career? And that's not necessarily from other PTs and coaches. It's from, the public. And what's kind of, is it just the side of, because you touched on a couple of things there. It's not just the training and education side of things, but that service, that professionalism on the gym floor. So why do you think there is a perception there isn't a long-term career? And then what's kind of the things or the areas that, people need to, coaches and trainers need to improve on? If that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. It's hard not to go back to education first to try and establish why. We currently sit at the table with like the big dogs who in the UK are writing what the standards are when it comes to personal training. And we sit there and we're like, you have no idea what you're talking about, because none of these things matter. So the standards of which the providers have to adhere to and acknowledge to for it to be a government certified possible course is absolutely terrible. So then you've got hundreds of educational providers giving this level two, level three fitness certification to a spine or a standards, a mapped standards that is completely irrelevant. Half of the stuff that you learn have no relevancy in what the people that you need to serve. And I mean, we're talking, the penetration rate of people in the UK, for example, that actually do fitness is absolutely diabolical. I think the latest stats are like only 15% of the UK population exercise.
Wow.
Yeah, which is like poor, right?
Yeah.
So, as a personal trainer, we shouldn't be looking at those people. That's where loads of us obsess about. It's like, how can we get the other 85% to like fall in love with movement, right? To be able to have, like, we call it fitness IQ, right? Like, how can you just raise someone's fitness IQ, their wellness IQ, their nutritional IQ, right? It's not an eat well plate, fuck's sake, right? So at the top, that's the framework. So then you look at the providers, right? So like right now, you can go online to Groupon and you can get a personal training certificate for like 20 quid, and you can get it done in like I think 3 weeks or something online. Blows my mind, right? So the barrier to get in to play this game is extremely, extremely low. So then you've got all these people running around with the so-called badge, right? And consumers are having terrible experiences, or they're seeing other people in the gym having terrible experiences, or no one's taught these people just basic etiquette on customer service, how you present yourself, how you dress, how you speak, how you approach people, emotional intelligence, like none of these other things that need to kind of be at the forefront when it comes to, like, I don't know, being on the gym floor, so to speak. So there's all these things. And then what happens is, because you don't know how to speak, you don't know how to market yourself, you don't know how to be professional, you don't know all these things, you churn out within 3 months. The average PT doesn't make it past 7 months, right? So you've got 7 months of like drowning before you walk away. So there's so many reasons as to why it's bad, but the biggest thing is, like, because education, it's not seen as a professional course, it's seen as a vocation. Right. So it's never going to get its what's the word? The kudos that it needs, right? Unless, like, well, it really isn't. That's the sad truth. And then the kind of hoops that you need to jump through just to prove yourself worthy of being a coach, no one's putting those hoops up because of inclusivity and like diversity, and like everyone needs to have a chance at these careers. And I'm all for that, provided that your values align with, like, you care about the client, that you care about the duty that you have as a personal trainer, the responsibility that you have as a personal trainer, the amount of power that you have as a personal trainer. As if you care about those things, I don't care who you are, what you are, provided we share the same values, then we're cool. But if you're like, oh, my mate's PT, he charges £50 an hour, I guess it would look cool every day in the gym and wear a string vest, I'm going to do the same. It's like, shut up. Get out.
Absolutely. With that, because one thing that you mentioned there in terms of the barrier to get into, coaching is pretty low. And you can go into a big gym, one of the big chains, and you can just kind of get lost. I know the other coaches, trainers that have gone in there and just not been able to make it. And do you think that there's more opportunity in maybe the more smaller independent gyms? I know for myself, we run an internship program with the local college and university where, like, they're getting the qualifications, but they're then getting real world experience of how do you actually speak to somebody? What if you're 21 and you're training someone who's 40, right? How do you actually change and hold a conversation, but also get the best out of them in their session? Do you think there's opportunity in smaller gyms to refine those skills and actually increase those standards?
Yes, absolutely. However, those small independent gyms being good operators are very few and far between, right? So, like, I have the privilege of, growing, scaling, and mentoring, 100 gyms across the UK, Ireland. We're in Singapore, we're in Hong Kong, we're in South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, we're in the Middle East. And the gyms that I look after, I only look after them because I want to work with them and because values align. But I've also spoken to another 150 who I'm like, how on earth are you a gym owner? Right? So the first thing is, like, it depends on who this gym owner is and what the values are within this establishment. whether or not for this new young mind to come in and be influenced by those people are good or not. So that's always a tough thing. The benefit of, let's say, the Globo Gym type thing is, and I believe in it fully, is it's where you do your basic training. It's where you get your first few scars, because you need those scars if you ever want to be successful in this game, or you ever want to become a successful gym owner, right? You need to take rejection, right? So, I remember my first day. I was broke when I started. I literally had no money, and I was desperate to make enough money so I can pay rent, so I could still be there as a trainer. And I remember, like, I come across confident now, but back then I had no confidence. I was fucking insecure. I wasn't jacked. Like, I had all the reasons why why would someone buy from me? That, like, all these insecurities. And I remember walking up to this woman, and she was on, like, the cross trainer, and I, like, walked up to her, thank you, and I was like, built up all this confidence, all courage, and she had her headphones in. I was like, can you take? And she literally was like, can you leave me? Can you fuck off? I'm trying to train. All you personal trainers, all of you are the same. Just leave me alone. I went downstairs, sat on the toilet, head in my hands, and I said a little prayer. I was like, dear Lord, please, oh Lord, please help me. Please, can this not be the thing? And it happened again. Anyway, long story short, you need to learn all that stuff, because I'm now privileged to be at this stage of my career. Looking back, I was like, I needed every single one of those lessons, right? Every single one of those lessons. So, to your point, I'm waffling. Either which way is a great opportunity to learn. The most important thing is you come into this industry with a curious mind, with a white belt mentality, going, how much can I learn? Who can I learn from? I mean, you've been a coach. How long have you been a coach for?
10 years.
Cool. So remember, 10 years ago, we would have worked for free for whoever we respected. We'd go, can I come clean your dumbbells just to hear you talk? Right? Like, that's what we would have done back then. Nowadays, you've got these students going, I want a 30 grand a year salary just to come be an intern. It's like, shut up.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually had a conversation the other week about this, and at the time when I left uni, I thought, I know I'm going to be a strength conditioning coach, and I got an internship at Bradford Bulls, and they said, oh, can you get here at this time? And I was like, yeah. At the time, I didn't have a car. I was like, yeah, I can get there. I had to get two buses, and then I missed the second bus to get there on time, and I was like, it was another 20 minute wait, and I just remember standing in the rain being like, I need to get there, and I'm gonna have to get a taxi or anything like that. And but equally, from there, now I know that anywhere I'm going, I'm always 15 minutes early. I'm always looking, getting the train before, which I think is, like what you say, you need to have mistakes happen like that to then put yourself in a position where, it doesn't happen again, or you feel more confident with that.
Yeah,
When you
exactly.
said, sorry, go on.
No, you carry on.
One thing that I was going to say on there is, learning from those lessons, like what you mentioned, there can sometimes be a phrase of, like what you said, they want to dive straight in at the newer trainers coming in, want to dive straight in at the top end. Do you think that, people are looking for those shortcuts? Because especially, well, probably since COVID, everyone is right, we're going to do online coaching. That's it. That's going to be a quick and easy, and then we're going to absolutely blow up. Do you think that's where, they're missing the lessons of those softer skills that they can actually learn on the gym floor?
Yeah, I mean, I've said this so many times. I don't believe you've earned the right to coach online until you've done a minimum of 3 to 5 years of in-person coaching. Because you fucking haven't at all. You don't know what coaching is. My stance is that, but you're right. The perception and the lure, or like the attraction, is one of like, oh, I could just go do this like Bali lifestyle thing. I could be like a nomad, It's like, yeah, fine. Try that, right? See how you get on. And the rise of the online fitness business mentor, I feel like everyone's a fitness business mentor at the moment. I mean, I fall into that weird category, but I don't look after online businesses. And if I did, I would first look, like I do with my gym owners, I look at your credibility as a coach first. If gym owners come to me and they don't have enough skin in the game as a coach, I'm like, either you hire a head coach way better than you, or you're doing my PFCA education stuff before we talk. Like, I'm not touching you until you do that. But just kind of go back to your point. It's like, it's easy to make money online, right? If you follow the recipe, it's easy to make money online because you can easily speak to people in regards to some kind of a niche with enough pain and then promise them enough of their outcome. And if you can get good at sales, which is a skill like anything else, you can learn and develop, you can sell and you can make a couple 12-week sales where it's like 2 grand in your bank and you're like, wow, this is more money than I'd ever make in a month, right? And then it's like, oh, that's me successful as a coach. But the problem is that without the grounding, without the education, without the know-how, you don't actually know how to program your clients past their first phase, their first 4 weeks, maybe their first 12 weeks. You don't know. And then you run into so many roadblocks. And then what happens is your churn becomes higher and higher. And then you start to fuck up your reputation. And I generally give it for most of these new online coaches who are loving life and making a little bit of cash, 3 years, and they'll be like, I don't know where to go with this. Like, I'm done. I'm bored. I have no connection. I have no team. I have no growth. I'm facing problems with my clients that I have no idea how to solve. So that's when I'll be there, the PFCA will be there to be like, cool, ready for some education now? You know what I mean? So yeah, the rise of the online coach is ridiculous. I think the only thing you can do as like a junior online coach is almost like lifestyle management. It's like, okay, Sarah, you want to lose 5 kilos, right? So let's discuss how we can manage your diary better. And let's discuss nutritional decisions for you to move a little bit more, eat a little bit less. Cool, that's my job. And I'll charge you online money for it.
Yeah, with that as well, because what you said there is what's beyond that. It'll get to a point where everything's got a lifespan. Everything's going to be able to work for a point. I always think, nothing is going to ever beat, that face-to-face interaction to be able to, as you're working as a trainer, as a coach, you map out a longer term vision. What's the end goal, how your clients are working towards there. How do you kind of scope out, a trainer or coach's career path and the next step? Because, I mean, from your experience, do you think a lot of coaches or trainers just haven't thought that far? They're just focusing on how can I get as many clients as much money right now?
I think that's such a good question. And I certainly didn't envisage being where I am today. I definitely didn't. And it's actually, it's something that if someone goes, what's your 5-year, 10-year plan? I have no idea. I have no idea because I just want to do the best that I can with what I have today. In line with my values and in line with who I value most. So my wife and my kids, right? So like that's all it is. If my efforts of me doing my best today mean that the opportunities that affords us in the next 5 years all stack up, like that's what I believe in. Now, same goes for when I started as a personal trainer. It was just what was the next iterative goal that made sense to me that excited me the most. So first was, can I just make enough money to pay rent to be there as a freelance trainer? I mean, rent at this gym was £1,250 a month. As a 19, 20-year-old trainer, that was like, as a South African, that's more money than I've ever heard in my life. So that was like goal number one. And then I was like, okay, cool. Now how can I get to like make a little bit more money? Because remember, I was living in my grandmother's garden shed. I didn't really have any bills. So it was like, hey, what's the next one? It's like, okay, cool. And then it's like, okay, now how can I get to 15 hours a week? Cool. Now how can I get? And there was a guy in the gym, and he was doing 35 hours a week. So I was like, okay, cool. That's the pinnacle. He's the busiest. I want to get there. And I was like, cool. And then him and I were like a little bit of competitive, like we're a little competitive. So it's like, who can get a 40? And then we got a 40. And then every other trainer in there had nothing on us. We ended up moving all the cardio equipment one morning before the gym opened, all like a meter forward. So we had more space behind the treadmills. We bought like TRXs and kettlebells and everything. We bought it all ourselves. And we just made our own corner. We had our own gym studio so that we just churned like from 6 a.m. till 10 at night. We just PT, bam, bam, bam. Until the point where like it got a little bit obsessive. Like every other trainer, because it's so competitive, every other trainer, when they came to start work, I was with a client. When they left to go have train in the mornings themselves, I was with a client. When they had their lunch break, I was with a client. And when they left at night, I was with a client. And it was like this weird ego thing. Anyway, bottom line is, through that period, anytime I was faced with a problem, a challenge, a client, something that the client had that I didn't know what it was, or I didn't know how to fix it, I would then invest into education or mentorship, whatever. I remember my first client who had a knee issue. I was like, I don't know how to deal with this, but there's a physio downstairs. So I went to the physio. I was like, I've just got this new client. This is what she's presented with. What do I do? And she was like, well, you're not really qualified to do this. I was like, I know. So can I pay you? And she was like, well, I'll tell you what, I really need to get back into shape. How about I train with you and you do an hour, and in return, I'll give you an hour of my time and we'll start there. And that's how it started. And then it's just the next thing and the next thing. So I guess I'm waffling because I'm passionate so much. The problem is that young coaches today have very few role models to look up to. There's no one good to look up to anymore. That's the problem. Ollie is the most successful coach in the UK by far, right? But no one coming up can look to Ollie and be like, wow, like I want to create what he's created. He's a black swan. He's the most unique human being I've ever met. So it's almost unrelatable. It's inspiring and it's like, wow. But like, where does the young coach go from there? And it's like, who are the coaches on the gym floor who are doing amazing work, who can be aspirational, right? Inspiring. Like, that's who I was for a long period of time. But even I've moved away from that now. So it's like, who do you look up to? Right. And that's the problem. Like the role models that exist are poor. But so then no one's giving you like a proof of concept, right? And therefore it doesn't make sense. Whereas, I shared this in a meeting the other day. Gens back in 2018, 2019, 2020, I was posting on stories, my clients moving exceptionally well, looking fucking good, finding optimal challenge in each set, each rep. And if you followed me for long enough, you'd see how much they progress over time. And you saw that as the ideal. It's like, cool, I can go back to back with clients. I can train them really well. I can have high standards for how they move. That's a great example. No one's doing that anymore because everyone's like, fucking TikTok. Hi, let me be a. Let me be some piece of shit online. It's like, oh, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's become that. Yeah, I've spoken this quite a lot that social media. I mean, I don't even have TikTok. People tell me about it. I coached a woman. I was coaching a client how to do a Bulgarian split squat, and she was like, "Oh, I can get into that position by using this." I saw it on TikTok, and I was like, "No, just do it this way. It's simple. You can do it." I thought that was a really good thing to mention all the points that you've said there, the role models, and it actually fills me with confidence that the amount of time that I've been coaching. The whole reason why I set up the podcast was I always remember. I had some clients that asked me some questions and I didn't know the answer. So I thought, who can I go and ask? You know, and reaching out to, you know, coaches like yourself to get those answers not only increases my knowledge, but then allows me to provide a better service to my clients and my members. So yeah, I think that's a really good thing to focus on and a piece of advice to for younger trainers and coaches to take on that. One thing that I did want to touch on from there, because one of the common themes, and you touched on this right at the start, was, you know, you've made the mistakes to then get to the point where you are from now. Do you think that what sometimes maybe on the flip side, as opposed to, you know, wanting to get to the end point really quickly, do you think what sometimes slows trainers and coaches' progress down is wanting to make sure that everything's perfect? So, like, they're going to hold off until they have the perfect program or service or things behind the scenes or business model. Do you think sometimes that can actually hold people back?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a very common saying, right? Perfectionism is just another form of procrastination. I guess what reigns true with what you're saying is a story from one of our students recently. So one of our most recent level three qualifications that came to an end, the cohort came to an end in December last year. There's one particular student on there. He's on the March on Online program. He just drinks the Kool-Aid. He was a great student. He was very, you know, engaged throughout the whole course. His dad, he's a dad, two or three girls, very young kids. He's a plumber. He's 43, but he's lost all passion and drive for being a plumber. He just wants to help people in health and fitness and all the rest of it. He's a really, really cool guy. Anyway, and he like this reference is like he was gonna wait till it was perfect, and then this was stacked and that was stacked, and all these things just like align. And on the last day, I was like, okay, cool. So what's the plan? And the plan that he had come up with was very long, drawn out, like slowly, whatever. I was like, okay, let me ask you a question. Do you have are you in a WhatsApp group with other dads from the school? And he's like, yes. I was like, okay, cool. I was like, sweet, sweet, sweet. I was like, get your phone out. And he's like, yeah. I was like, get your phone out. And this is in front of 65 other students. And I was like, right, type this. And I said, hey guys, as you know, I've been doing my PT qualification. And as of next week, I'm going to be fully certified. So to celebrate this, I'm going to be taking on five clients to be part of my case study group starting January 1st, whatever it was. As my time is very limited, this is very exclusive. So if you're in, just send me like a fist bump, something like that. And then I said, I promise that I'll get you in the best shape of your life, all while not having to sacrifice either the pizza or the beer or both, provided you do the work. Right. And I said, send that. And he was like, are you sure? I was like, send it. He sent it. The WhatsApp group popped off. Popped off. He made a whole bunch of sales on the Monday day after. And he's already now a full-time coach. He's hung up his let's say his wrench. And he's coaching in his garage, and he's never felt more fulfilled. And he messages my colleague, Craig Massey, our head of education, daily going, bro, like this is life-changing. Thank you so much. So that's a roundabout way to be like, just do the thing, because it's just limiting beliefs that it's not going to work out, provided, you know, you are well-intentioned, you've got good enough education as a grounding, and like you live and breathe the values of what you're trying to sell. That's probably the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was a nice little way to round that off there. I think that story was everything that you said there about, you know, education, the values, and actually just, you know, do exactly what you said, you know, do the thing. I thought that was a nice little roundup from there. That was, yeah, that was cool. Thanks a lot, Jens, for taking the time to jump on. I've been looking forward to this episode ever since we set it up. And yeah, I've been looking forward to chatting with you. The last question that I like to ask, though, from everything that we've chatted about today, And for everyone listening, whether it be, a coach that's been training a long time or somebody just new into the industry, what would be your take-home points or words of wisdom?
I think the thing that stands out is that because online is such a prevalent thing, as in social media, people's presence, people's authority, no matter where you are in your career, just be very careful of who you put on a pedestal. So audit your peers. Make sure that the people you look up to share similar values to you, and inspire you rather than put you down or make you feel less than. So I would say audit your peers, and then just to say thank you for having me on. Anytime someone reaches out for me to jump on their podcast, I'm like, who, me? Like, really? So it's always a privilege, and if we can spread the good word of good work as coaches, then we're only doing good things.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that message. My goal is if somebody can take at least one, nugget of information from this and most importantly apply it, then yeah, I feel like I won't be going too far wrong. Thanks again, James, for taking the time to jump on. If anyone has any questions about what we've chatted about today, see the content you put out there, or just want to reach out to you, where could people find you or reach out to you?
So talking about Instagram, if you wanted to find me personally, it's coach underscore Jens. If you're a coach looking for further education, you want to follow the dot PFCA, Professional Fitness Coaches Association. And if you're a gym owner looking to grow and scale your gym, you want to build a high performing team, and you want to become wildly profitable, then you'll follow the Gym Owner Network.
Nice.
But reach out to me or my team, Craig Massey, our head of education. He's a phenomenal, like one of the best educators in the space. If there's anything that coaches need, like we're always there. We're always providing stuff. We're always trying to make a difference.
Nice. Well, thanks again for jumping on. Thanks a lot to everyone listening, and I will see you all next week.
Sweet, bro.